it's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Konser. And today I am visiting the oldest single screen cinema west of the Mississippi. The Clinton Street Theater doesn't look all that different since the silent movie days of the 19-teens and 20s, but the management is about to change. Aaron Coulter has been working in comics and technology around town for the past 15 years. He helped start the live music label Banana Stand Media out of a basement in true Portland fashion. He's wanted to buy the Clinton Street Theater for a decade and finally got the chance this year, along with five other people. Susan Tomorrow is a film programmer who moved from Austin, Texas to Portland 2 years ago. She spent a decade in Austin doing guerrilla programming, tape swapping, and video clerking with a special love for cult, horror, sci-fi, and Golden Age Hollywood. Susan, Aaron, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
So the Clinton Street Theater, this is a cinema that's been open since 1914 and fiercely independent for at least all of our lives and probably a couple of lives before that.
Yeah, for better and sometimes for worse, but we're still going our own way.
Well, for our listeners who are unfamiliar with the Clinton Street neighborhood, I want to give a bit of a historical picture. Until recently, it was a street of cheap late-night cafes and record stores and video rental places. In fact, the whole neighborhood was slated to be knocked down in the 1970s for the Mount Hood Freeway, which fortunately never materialized. Nowadays, the building that your cinema occupies is surrounded by bistros and antique shops and million-dollar craftsman houses.
Yeah, I don't think either of us can afford either of those things, but the foot traffic is nice, and the closure of the street, during the pandemic to allow the bars and restaurants to expand their seating, it's only open to bike traffic now, is actually pretty great. And so we often get people coming out and about for the neighborhood who look up and see the marquee and come in just to see what we're playing.
So the section of Clinton Street between 25th and 26th is now just a pedestrian and bike street with lots of seating, cafe seating on either side.
Yeah, I think it's going to be permanent. I hope it's going to be permanent, but I guess that's up to city council to decide later this year.
Well, for the past several years, the Clinton Street Theater has been owned and operated by the husband and wife team of Roger and Lonnie Jo Lay. And now the management is expanding into a collective, which is kind of like how the theater was run in the 1970s and 80s, back before your time, back when it was more of a community project than a business.
Yeah, this kind of came about because Tom Kischel, who's another owner, and I met while working at Dark Horse Comics about a decade ago. The previous owner, Seth, before Lonnie Jo and Roger, had posted that the theater was for sale on Craigslist. Tom and I talked about trying to buy it. We really didn't have the opportunity or capital at the time. And so Lonnie Jo and Roger really took the theater into a new era, made a lot of upgrades and improvements, returned it to that sort of community gathering place for all different types of events. And then when the pandemic hit, Lonnie Jo sent out one of her famous email newsletters. And at the end of it, she just very honestly wrote that she didn't know what the future was going to hold. And if that there was anybody out there reading who wanted to potentially take over the reins, to get in touch. So reconnected with Tom, talked to the Lays, and then connected with Susan when she came into town, and a few other owners, Stephen, Morgan, and David. And we pooled what little we could to purchase the place, and we're able to keep it running. We've got a GoFundMe now to try and make some additional improvements over the summer, but we're going to keep it the same old Clinton Street.
Yeah, the building is so old. We mentioned it's over a century that the theater has been operating, that there probably aren't any blueprints that exist. There's got to be like surprises you're running into the plumbing and the electrical. You're probably finding out new things about all of that every day.
Oh yeah, Tom is really the expert there. He's been making sure that we're staying up to code and making sure the lights stay on and that sort of stuff. But I know Susan specifically, she went under the stage. And I mean, Susan, do you want to talk about all the fun stuff that you found?
Oh, I would love to share a little bit. I love old buildings. It's part of the appeal for the Clinton for me is that it was never a Sears or a corner store. It's always been a functioning theater, which is bonkers. But the under the stage, you can find everything from projector parts to evidence of possible teenage activities to something that kind of resembled a Pompeii mummy, and I won't go into it, but it's been really fun. I love the cobweb holes and just actually being able to see the history of the theater through layers of paint, the walls, the carpet, the seats. Thank you for doing that, by the way. Has been really, really cool.
And nobody really knows what the future holds for that building. It's just sort of held together as long as it has by sheer force of will.
Yeah, if the earthquake comes, it probably won't stay standing.
So projection exhibition technology has changed just radically in the last 20 years. I mean, we had 35 millimeter film back in the 20th century, and then we've had digital, and digital has changed. It's been 2K, it's been 4K, and there's still 35 millimeter at the Clinton Street. It's one of the few theaters in town that still projects 35 millimeter movies, but you're finding plenty of other ways of screening independent films, old films, festival films, all of the stuff that the audience has come to expect.
Yeah, a lot of independent filmmakers today obviously are shooting digital. And so when we host their titles, oftentimes, you know, they're provided to us via file to screen, but Rocky Horror Picture Show especially is shown on 35 millimeter. And we are hoping to expand some of the 35 millimeter offerings, but we're also going to be doing a lot more 16 millimeter, where the projector will be right in the audience. So the audience gets to see the changeover and all the fun stuff that comes with that. In fact, Susan, I think, has a terrific background in a lot of art and oddity films, and she's helping bring a pretty cool 16 millimeter event to the theater in June. Susan, do you want to talk about it? I think it's from your connections in Austin.
Yeah. I lived in Austin for long enough to kind of, if you're in the film community, have worked everywhere and screened everywhere and kind of done that thing. But one of the people that I made friends with was Ivan Petchev. He's from the American Genre Film Archive, and he's their head archivist, and he's a huge rabid collector of rare 16 millimeter films. And one of the ways that we kind of helped each other get through the pandemic summer was doing backyard 16 millimeter parties while everything was closed. So he's getting a roadshow together, and they're going to be touring and coming by the Clinton, of course, at the end of June. Before that, I know they're going to the Grand Illusion, maybe the Beacon, not sure, but we'll have more up as it gets closer to the date.
So you're building up a little infrastructure to get the 16 millimeter projector in the middle of the audience.
Yeah, there's a great guy in town, Greg. Greg, if you're listening, how's it going, man? Shout out to you. But Greg helps us with a lot of that and actually comes in and runs the projector. We've got some long-term plans as well, but we'll see how those come together.
So Susan, you spend a lot of time in Austin, which is sort of a spiritual cousin to Portland. So you have a lot of experience with the indie film exhibition crowd, including the Alamo Drafthouse folks?
My thing in Austin, for the most part, I did a long-running series called Black Widow Cinema that was all feminist revenge films, all sci-fi and horror, pre-1992 kind of a thing. And at the same time, I was working at an independent video store called I Love Video, which closed shortly after, well, about a year or so ago, tragically. No more independent video stores in Austin as of now. But, you know, I love Movie Madness here. but working there led me into programming special events for different venues around town. And in Austin, it's a unique situation because every bar is a venue. And you have a lot of weird options. So yeah, really just spending a decade showing everything to everyone that I can, including, you know, 300 people or two people. I'm happy to show it if it's something interesting or rare, doesn't get a lot of attention.
Well, and we've had people here in Portland invite some of the Austin crowd up to show their grindhouse films and their movie trailers and things like that.
Yeah, it's a really small world, film community-wise, state to state, because it's, you know, I have friends that know Dan, I have friends here, they're like, oh, you must know Ivan, especially when you're into these particular types of genre films. And if you're a collector as well, the circle gets small, which is kind of nice, because then you can do amazing events like this with people that have a specialty and want to share it in different places.
Now, Susan, what brought you to Portland from Austin? Because, of course, you know, Austin is a scene that's absolutely blowing up these days. And meanwhile, there's all of these talking heads that say, well, Portland's over. Did you arrive at the wrong time?
Oh, if it's over, I arrived at the perfect time. Austin, it's a beautiful place, but I feel like I kind of did everything there that I needed to do in a decade. It was wonderful to be able to work with the Draft House in the early days a little bit, and then with Austin Film Society, the American Genre Film Archive, and just getting to know every person in that scene and being able to experience that was wonderful. But in Texas, it is extremely difficult, well, in Austin, even more rare to find a place like the Clinton, an actual community space that caters for either cheap or free to things that aren't guaranteed to make money. Whereas Austin, any community space like that is usually gobbled up by corporate interests, you know, as soon as it's for sale. So keeping the Clinton alive is such an incredible quest that's close to my heart. And the reason why I moved to Portland was to get out of the desert and because there are more tiny, ancient, independent theaters here than anywhere else in the world.
Well, I do remember visiting Austin back in the 90s, and it seemed like a very interesting scene. There was a lot of community organizing. There were Earth Firsters with guns. There were, of course, independent studios, Richard Linklater Studio, for example. But lately, it seems like the tech bro community has just kind of taken over.
Yeah, a lot of my friends that are in music or the arts, most of my musician friends now live in the outer towns like Hutto, Taylor, Lockhart, just because that's the only place you can afford to be weird if you want to be weird in Austin.
Now, Aaron, you've been working in technology yourself, as well as comics. And of course, we love comics on the show. We love all the narrative arts. How does all that tie in with your love of film and your involvement in the film scene?
You know, strangely enough, I was working for Rose City Comic Con before it got sold to a larger kind of conglomerate. So back when Rose City Comic Con was still independent, I was working with Ron over there, and we would do these citywide scavenger hunts at different comic book stores around the city. And then at night we would have a free film at the Clinton Street Theater. And that's kind of how I first met Lonnie, Joe, and Roger. I'm one of those freelance tech bros, unfortunately, but that's how I've been able to save up a little bit of money.
But you're not a billionaire. You don't have a rocket.
No, I don't think I should be a billionaire or anyone, quite frankly. I'm probably more aligned with those Earth Firsters who enjoy firearms than I am anyone who owns a rocket.
So the Clinton Street Theater has a few bragging rights, and one of them is you have the longest running weekly screening anywhere of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And during the pandemic, during the COVID lockdown, the theater was closed, but you still continued Rocky Horror. Tell us about that.
Well, that was actually a former employee, Nathan, who would come and play it to an empty theater. So the cabaret actually wasn't performing during that. It was often Nathan, maybe one or two other people, just playing the film every Saturday night, just so we could keep a hold of that world's longest record. the Rocky Horror Picture Show community here in Portland is unlike anything I've experienced in any other city. You know, every week, dozens and dozens of people come out. The cast and the cabaret are incredibly dedicated, wonderful, kind people. It's amazing that it's been going on this long, and we're really proud to continue that tradition.
Yeah, the cabaret has been going on since what, the 1970s?
Yeah, it's been going on, I believe, since 1978. And so I think that makes us the 44 years running straight, which is longer than I've been alive.
And something I wanted to add in too, just really quick with Rocky, even though it's, you know, been going for 44 years, every Saturday, the genuine enthusiasm from people of all ages, every single Saturday night, is just really inspiring.
You know, I just talked to someone on the phone today. She had gone to the Rocky Horror Picture Show decades ago. She had brought her daughter, and now her granddaughter is of the age where they're going to go as like three generations of women coming to the Rocky Horror Picture Show next weekend. So it's a family affair, strangely enough.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And today we're talking with Susan Tamaro and Aaron Coulter. They are members of the collective that is now running the Clinton Street Theater here in Portland. Aaron, Susan, before you took over the Clinton Street, the latest group of managers, have you been participating in some of the activities that have been going on there and sort of learning the ropes along the way from the owners who are stepping down, Lonnie Joe and Roger Lay?
Yeah. So when I started to talk to Lonnie Joe about potentially, you know, taking the Clinton Street into a new era, she was really kind and allowed me to book a lot of the movies last summer in 2021. And that's when I did, you know, all of June for Pride programming, Sci-Fi July, October was all horror movies and will be again this year. And I booked, Susan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I booked this kind of obscure film called The Last Angel of History. And Susan had recently moved from Austin, was probably one of, I want to say eight people who came out to two or three people that came out to that film on a Sunday afternoon. And she wrote in saying she wanted to potentially volunteer. And of course, you know, as soon as you meet Susan and learn about her background, Lonnie Joe, you know, hired her, I think, that same week. And when we started to get further into discussions about, okay, who's going to actually come in and take over the theater and manage it. We were all so excited for Susan to be a part of it. And I am really excited for what we're gonna do in May at the theater. Susan came up with an amazing theme and a list of films that I'll let her tell you more about.
Hey, thank you, Aaron, for all the compliments. I do wanna put in the fact, you know how there's all of these 80s movies where there's a special guy or a special boy and all the kids rally around him, like Monster Squad, like the werewolf and the Dracula, or just, oh, the special boy's really got us good. And then they accomplish the big goal. That is the best way I can describe what this whole process has felt like with Aaron and all of the other co-owners. It's a life dream. So being able to have all of the input from the collective owners on programming along with my own, because mine does tend to veer into the more you, I don't know, would have to explain things to your grandma about later kind of a thing. But yeah, we're doing, for May, we're doing Pagan May. A lot of it's centered on, well, movies that are about witchcraft, but really what they're about is the fear of female power, which is historically really, really good for cinema, actually, because we're going to be showing a few different titles. There's just a couple I want to mention. Svankmajer's Alice, which is a beautiful Czechoslovakian film with a ton of stop motion, again with practical effects. I Married a Witch with Veronica Lake. Things from different decades throughout the month, and a lot of them I'll be doing intros for with trivia and prizes. Yeah.
Taking risks, stepping out on a ledge, like always. One of the things I've always noticed about the Clinton Street is either it is two or three people in the audience, or it's a completely packed house.
Oh, we hope to change that. I still think Portland has enough weirdos in it to get enough people out so that we can keep it going. We're certainly going off the beaten path with some of the bookings in May and probably through the rest of the summer. So if you want the Clinton Street to stay weird and independent, if you want these types of programs to stay in the city, we really need people to come out and buy tickets and show up so that we can keep doing it.
And there's a long history of live performance and even interactive performance. I can remember back in the day, the occasional silent Dada film fest when the audience would supply the soundtrack, bringing in instruments.
That sounds wonderful. Yeah, we're going to keep the community theater aspect alive. There's a production group called Monkey with a Hat On that will return in June with their 10-minute play festival. And that's something where anyone can write, direct, act, and that'll happen over two different weekends. And that's always a packed house. And it's great to see people who maybe you've never done theater before get the chance to do that. There's not a lot of opportunities. And then in August, we're also going to have the new play from the Broken Planetarium called Live Prophets Live. I'm really excited to see what they do. They're a really great, independent, you know, forward-thinking theater production group. And also with my background in independent music and another one of our owners, David Gluck, we're going to be looking to do some audio upgrades and host an occasional concert. But I think it's going to be chosen carefully, and it'll probably just be a single performance, and we'll likely be filming and recording that too for posterity.
And I understand you're looking forward to the return of the 48-hour film festival. That was a long-running annual event before the pandemic, and the gist of it was that each team would have a crew, camera people, editors, special effects people, sound people, and they wouldn't even get their topic until they gathered together, and then they'd have to run out and make a movie in 48 hours.
Correct. Yeah, that's returning in August as well. Really excited for that. We're going to have some independent horror movie festivals in October. I think, you know, going back to the idea of the Clinton Street being this community living room, again, there's not a lot of places for independent filmmakers to show their work on the big screen, and we want to provide that as much as possible.
You said you've had some plans for upgrading the sound and the projection. And you got some people on board. You've got a lot of connections in the community, tech people who are stepping in to help you out with that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's why we launched the GoFundMe. So there's just a few things that we'd like to do. A new projection system at some point, new sound, more microphones, you know, stage monitors, that sort of thing, so that when we do have a band come in for a special performance, they get the sound quality that they deserve. There's also just like a lot of other little things around the theater that we'd like to make better for performers. You know, Susan talked about all the wild things that we found under the stage and in some of the back rooms. We want to clear those out, make a proper green room. We've got some national touring comedians coming in June, and we hope to have more events like that. So we'd like them to be a little bit more comfortable before they go on stage.
I just wanted to add to that, because you mentioned earlier that, you know, the building is old, the business has been around forever, and it is kind of taped together. But the cool thing about it is that it's layers upon layers of people caring about keeping it alive. So we're just trying to add another layer with the GoFundMe. And that way, too, we'll have access to a lot of titles that we currently can't play with our projection system. So, you know, even more weird stuff.
So we mentioned that the Clinton Street used to be a bit of a collective back in the 70s and 80s. This is harder nowadays, of course, with the price of rents in Portland, the price of running anything. And of course, you know, the technology keeps changing and it keeps running up bills. So what's your strategy for keeping this collective, this little independent hive at the Clinton Street Theater, keeping it independent, keeping it a duocracy?
You know, that's a good question, and it's something we are working with every day. In fact, we had a meeting with the owners this morning to talk about how to have some better policies, you know, maybe bring in some mediators. So there's six of us right now, seven of us who are owners. We have a handful of employees that we're working towards giving them a pathway to ownership as well. It's difficult, but the nice part is, and I think Susan has mentioned this before, you know, we all believe in each other. We all believe that we have the same goals. And so that helps tremendously. I don't think any of us would be taking our time and money to do this if we didn't believe in keeping the Clinton Street alive. We all have full-time day jobs and split up nights and weekends coming in here to help out the staff to keep this place running.
I just wanted to say that I'm really, really excited to have such a good starting space like the Clinton. I want to keep it very similar as to how it is, but I really want to bring back the experiential treatment of like a William Castle film. You know, I want there to
be
the
Tingler.
Yes, exactly. I want there to be a shock in the seat. I want things, that's why I always love a theme. I want a whole month of surf punks and new wave Nazis. You know, I want the whole thing. And I think that that's something that you can always get at the Clinton that you can't get anywhere else. And one of the reasons why we are so deserving of some better projector money. I feel extremely grateful to have gotten in such a magical time. It feels like the right thing. And I think we have the dual benefit of everyone's heart is in the right place. And also the Clinton is never going to be space rocket money. So that is helpful when working with a lot of people. It is absolutely a business that you run for the love of it and not the profit. And that, I think, takes out a huge amount of issues by itself.
Yeah, I guess I'll add on, you know, the Clinton Street has always been, at least as long as I've been in Portland, the Clinton Street has always been sort of a bastion for progressive politics and sometimes even radical events. I remember during the 2020 uprisings, you know, the previous owners put Anarchist Clubhouse on the marquee, and we want to keep that.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and my guests today have been Susan Tomorrow and Aaron Coulter. They are members of the newest management group behind the Clinton Street Theater here in Portland. Aaron and Susan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And for those listeners who might be finding out more about the Clinton Street Theater and your plans for its next 100 years, where would they look?
Probably the best place would just be our website. It's cstpdx.com. Check out our May programming. I'm pretty excited. In addition to a lot of the weird, witchy movies, we're going to be premiering the new Gaspar Noé movie, which is this kind of meta horror experimental film. We're going to be premiering the new Dinosaur Jr. documentary. So we're doing a lot of, you know, retrospective titles, but we're also going to be bringing some new independent stuff, comedy, drag, you name it, we'll do it.
And the Church of Film is one of your resident companies.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Muriel, the Church of Film is fantastic. Muriel is probably one of the most important people in independent film in the world. Just fantastic.
Well, thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Words and Picture.
Picture show in the back row. To the late night double feature. picture, picture.